Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, April the 2nd. I hope all of you got through the April Fool's Day without being totally embarrassed or did something clever that helped you get through the day. Seems here in Atlanta, where I am, the weather is really nice. I'm hoping that the weather is good all over the place. I want to say hello to the panel. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing fine.
Good.
We're doing fine.
Up here in Michigan.
I even hate to say this. But, Don, what's the weather like in Florida?
It's a beautiful, balmy 75 degrees.
Boring. Boring.
What's the weather like in Michigan, Bruce?
Sunny and 65. Appreciative sunshine like Florida, time after time. Boring.
All right, I want to get into the show.
Give me some of that boring.
I think all the people who have been listening, and I got some messages last week, and one of them was hilarious. It was, I don't think Frank is in right now, but it was someone wanted to know why Frank had this special connection with God, because Frank last week said he knew there wasn't any Armageddon coming up and anything, and somebody wrote and said, oh, you know, does he talk to God personally? How does he know this? Someone's going to ask that question, but he's not even on yet. But what I wanted to say is something I want to bring up that's me, and it's probably a conspiracy theory by me, but has everyone been sick with the flu lately? I mean, does everyone know somebody or has been? I mean, I have been down. I know it's going around. Any of you guys been sick with the flu?
No,
healthy as a horse.
Really?
Yeah.
Everywhere I call people in the East Coast, West Coast, everyone's sick. Kids are sick. Older people are getting this. There's a flu going around that's really, really tough, rough on people. I know it's to an epidemic level where people are, you know, not understanding what's going on. And I have the theory that, you know, it's possibly that somebody from one of the foreign countries has done something here to spread this around. But I do know that it's very bad and it's all over the place. Don, have you had any of your family members been sick?
No.
No? Wow. Oh, that's strange. Because everyone
if you're a regular churchgoer, like Don and myself and all of you, then you don't get sick.
Okay. So you have that contact with God. Yeah? Okay, you're the one that has that contact.
No.
Frank, have you been sick?
I would say this, though, David. You know, we are becoming, even though we've always been a cosmopolitan country, we're getting more and more immigrants from other countries that bring other diseases. I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying things that our system hasn't been used to, and maybe that's some of it, too.
That's a different spin on it.
Why not?
So you're saying that the refugees that are coming into the United States are bringing diseases that we were not familiar with, and since we are not immune to them, we're catching them? Is that what you're saying?
Possibly. I mean, it could work the other way, too. We could be exposing them to diseases they're not used to.
Okay. What do you think about that, John?
Well, I mean, I have heard that, and I can't remember what it was. It was measles or mumps, but all of a sudden we have a big, great big epidemic in it in the country again because no one's vaccinated for it. A lot of the refugees that are coming in aren't vaccinated for it, and it's making a comeback right now.
Yep, I heard that too.
Well, Frank, what do you think about that?
Well, I think the people that they're not vaccinated are the people in our country. You know, we've got a lot of people that don't believe in scientific information, and a lot of people think that vaccines cause illnesses, and a lot of people don't subject their children to that. So, yeah, the rise of measles has come back, according to the CDC, but it's the American people that we're talking about. It's not any foreigners bringing this disease to these shores at this time. Mm-hmm. And yes, family members that have been sick. And in fact, I'll tell you what, our local hospital, which is pretty good size, doesn't have any bedroom in it. All right. Yeah, because it's full.
Yeah, something is going around, and it's on all the coasts, north and south, in the United States right now, and it's making people very sick. And it's something that's lasting. It's not like flu 3 or 4 days and you're done. This is a 3 and 4 week piece of diseases that are going around. But my whole point is we have an epidemic in the United States, but no one is talking about it because the news that we're getting is putting away all the things that I think are important to the American public. So I'm confused on why we haven't been talking about this in the news. And I think it's something that's important when America is getting sick. Is it that it's not that important anymore, or the CDC doesn't come out and say like they used to? I mean, we're just all getting this bad news and what's going on wrong in the United States rather than the stuff that we're needing. And I think we're going to have to put our foot down to make sure that everyone, because kids are getting that and they're getting it 2 or 3 times. And if you look at the statistics, there are a lot of seniors that are passing away from this, but nobody's talking about it. Why do you think that is true, Don? You're in that media. What's going on?
I don't know what it is, David. We've just been bombarded over the past year and a half or two with the election and so forth, and it's dominated the news. Health. Has not been a major topic. But I'll tell you, when you live in paradise, South Florida, you don't get too sick too often, especially when you're up in age like me. The weather's nice. What can I say? I mean, I'm blessed.
Mm-hmm. I never put it in my mind that weather was a factor in whether you got diseases or not.
Weather is a main factor and a true factor. Now, in the colder climates, I used to live in Michigan, and man, I was bound to catch a cold every winter, and I just couldn't help it. But since I've been down here the past 10 years, I haven't had a cold. And I haven't had, well, maybe one or two, but I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. All right. Those of you guys that are living in Michigan, Bruce,
yes.
Do you see more colds and stuff up there? Because it's always cold 9 months of the year in Michigan.
Well, Don's right in the fact of with the rather drastic seasonal changes we have here. You can have more molds out, you know, agents in the air that give allergies, all kinds of things that probably grow here that may not grow in a more arid, drier place. But you can also, so short answer is, yeah, we're probably more susceptible to things that can irritate you or make you sick than other parts of the country. But you can also go to the very cold extremities, you know, up into Canada, spend your half of your season up, half of your year up there, and it's cold enough that you're not going to find many agents you're going to get sick from either. So I tend to agree with Don that weather can have a big component, not the only component.
Okay. I have a question, and we're talking about illnesses and stuff, but many of the young guys that will be listening, I want to throw this out there, and some of us older guys too have, how do you say this? You know what the pregnancy test, the sticks are that women use to find out if they're pregnant. Has anybody on the panel ever used one?
That's a question. What?
Wait a minute.
There's a reason why I'm asking this question. John, have you ever used one?
No, I have never. No, I haven't. I'm anxious to hear where this is going. I'm anxious to hear where this is going, though. I'll tell you that.
Well, it is suggested that men, every once in a while, take it out and use it, urinate on it like the women do, because that test also picks up certain diseases. And one of them that it brings up is testicular cancer. So
really?
The gene causes testicular cancer will show up as pregnant for a man on the stick. So,
really?
Yes. It's something that just recently was discovered. So I, you know, it sounds funny, but now men need to go out and buy one if you just want to check yourself out and make sure. But there are other diseases that other cancers that will show up also. But that is one that they know, you know, 75% to 90% of the time will show up as pregnant for a man. If you get that and you use it and pee on it and it shows you're pregnant, that means you need to go see your doctor.
Wow.
See? What's the reason?
Really? 75%?
Yes.
Hmm.
It picks up the gene. The gene, it, for some reason, it shows the gene that causes testicular cancer on the pregnancy test stick. So now, everybody needs to go and buy one. Take a test it out.
You know what's going to come out next is a man's version.
Yeah, I'm surprised. You know, now that they figured it out, you're probably going to see the men's version of it, but it, you know, it'll be called something else, cancer stick or something. Yeah. But that's a cigarette. So I don't know what they're going to do. Talking about the news and things that are going on, you know, right now, D.C. is having a major problem. Everyone knows about the Tennessee missing teen who the teacher took the girl away and everyone's looking for. In news, you don't know that there are 22 missing girls in the D.C. area. No one, that is not a big to-do right now. But in the D.C. area, they're all upset, or not upset, they're all gearing up to figure out why there are Black and Latina girls in the D.C. area, 22 of them in the last 2 or 3 months that have come up missing. But, there's, you know, so, and because of the news, the way it's going, you know, the politics and all those other things, we're missing the pieces that are important to us in the United States. What do you think about that, Don? Huh. Hello? Don, are you there?
I think that's a travesty, David, and I'm glad you brought that up. You know, if we weren't so dominated by the election and by the news, that would be a lead story. And it's ironic. Well, it's not ironic. It seems to be not covered that much because they are young women of color and Latino. Now, I got to say, I'm not racist or I'm not stereotypical, but if they were a mixed group of women or some white women in there, it would be more news coverage. But this is a travesty. That many young women missing in Donald Trump's hometown. He's there every day in Washington, D.C., and it's not really publicized. Explain that to me. explain that? I mean, I don't have no other answer than what I just said.
Right. That is a big news article. I mean, that is something we should all be concerned about. I mean, and we need to know what's going on in D.C. and how they're trying to solve this issue, because if no one's talking about it, it's going to get worse and worse. It's like, you know, something that we should all be aware of, because things like that are happening all over the United States and nobody right now is talking about them.
Why is hey, David, that? Can anyone explain why that's not being talked about and not being in the front of the media? Why is that?
Was that Jeremiah?
I would like to. I offered up an answer to that last week.
Yeah.
When we were having the argument in regard, you know, the reality is I didn't write the book on it, but the book on it is that if it pertains to black people, then it doesn't really matter, okay? It's a mind over matter. Now, let me give you an example. And the example that I gave you last week was the one I should have mentioned was the drug epidemic, right? When a large segment of the population were black and involved with drugs, the answer to that is incarcerate them. When a large segment of the population becomes white and are also involved in drugs, then you have, let's give them these sticks on the street that'll get them turned around in case they overdose. Let's take them into a therapy. Instead of arresting them at the police station, let's take them to a place by the police where they can get help. It doesn't become a matter. Right now, you know, the United States is suffering from a large addiction problem. And so the remedies are, no one's talking about sending anybody to jail or anything else. They're talking about putting them in the squad car and taking them to centers where they can get help, or carrying EpiPens, so to speak, and to get these people recovered when they overdrug. So the reason why they're not getting any focus in D.C. is because D.C. is the second largest black city in the United States of America, and it's black people that it's happening to.
Can you think about that, Bruce?
Well, I will agree in part in the fact that there's a lot of people that feel that if it's a minority situation, they don't get the proper attention. I'll go that far. But I would respectfully disagree in the fact that let's take this issue of missing children or missing young people, young adults, whatever you want to categorize it as. We've got an epidemic of this all over the country of kids missing for whatever reason. So it's not just a black concentration in a city or a particular city that might be more minority than non-minority. It's everywhere. And I agree the fact that the press, they could easily make that news and help that situation, and they choose not to.
You know, there are children missing. That's a big, you know, I've been noticing that around the United States, there are these
everywhere
reports that come out of children missing, and it just seems like an epidemic of that going on too, but it's across the nation.
David.
But this particular piece is 22 teenage girls in a short period of time missing out of the same kind of neighborhood-ish, you know, same state or whatever, which would make you think that somebody is actually, there was a time back, remember when all the young boys were missing in D.C. and they got this guy who was going in the river or something, remember that? Jeremiah, you want to say something?
Hey, David.
Yes.
Yeah, the first thing comes to mind is we might have a serial killer, rapist,
yes,
some type of thing on our hands here. And I think the problem is when it comes to our local government, local police department, sheriff's office, they're not doing their part as far as if it was an international crime, I think things would be blazing like crazy. This is domestic. It's some of our own family members or friends or nearby neighbors for people that live in D.C. So I think our problem is, you know, we don't act accordingly when it's home. And I'm pretty sure they have all these task force for America's Most Wanted people or international terrorists or, you know, I think we can spend more time in our local areas instead of us looking for convicted felons that are wanted. We should be looking for this guy, a possibly guy or even a female that's abducting children, killing them, probably raping them, probably beheading them. We don't know what's going on right now. But I think this is an issue with over 20 teenagers, possibly more females, missing. That's big.
All right.
So if we could just imagine, let's just say this person has killed 20 people, because we don't know if these children are alive or dead. So we should be taking actions as if we had 20 dead people. You know what I mean?
Right. All right. One of the reasons I wanted to bring this conversation up is I think we as men and men who listen need to have those conversations, and we say this all the time, with our families, especially with our younger kids, about when you're out. You know, one of the things I haven't noticed is kids outside playing a lot like they used to. But I do know with the sun coming out and it's spring break, kids will be out moving around a lot right now. So this is a good time for we as men and to, you know, have those conversations, sit down conversations. These are like the birds and the bees conversations. These are who you talk to in these days and times, who you don't talk to, what if somebody's talking to you or anything like that, what is it that you do? And I think we need to think about those as men across this nation and start having those conversations, which I'm sure a lot of people are doing right now, but we just want to put it out there that it's important right now because things are just at a level of concern for all of us. All right. So let's get into what the news is talking about. Let's start off with Michael Flynn. When he says he wants immunity, who's the ex-national security advisor, but he wants immunity to have a conversation about anything that he did that was related to the committee's investigation on the Russian interference of the U.S. election. Isn't that kind of saying, I know something that's going to get me in trouble or us in trouble, and so I want immunity before I talk to you? But the Democrats are saying maybe we won't give it to him. So I don't know where that's going to go. What do you think, John?
Well, the last thing I had heard was that he didn't actually ask for it. They had asked the Senate and the House of Representatives regarding that, and they said he had never come to them and asked for it. So, you know, you don't know if that's more fake news or what, I don't agree with any of these people taking the fifth and immunity. I mean, you've got the people that were in the Benghazi, you've got the people that were with the IRS going after the conservative 501(c)(3) charities who all took the fifth or wanted immunity. I believe if you're a government official and you're in charge of millions of dollars and you're making all of these decisions and for the country and stuff and it turns out that things aren't going the right way or whatever, I don't think you should be able to fall back on taking the fifth and getting immunity for that type of stuff. I mean, I think you need to answer, you know, if any one of us did any of this type of stuff, we'd be in jail. Simple as that. And I don't believe anybody who works for the government should be any better than the rest of us. They should have to sit there and face the music, you know, same as we would.
And I agree with that. Because one of the things he said was he admittedly didn't report $100,000. Now they're saying it's not that he didn't report it, it's that he didn't dissect it like they wanted to. What do you think about this, Don?
David, here's a man that was a part of the cabinet prior to accepting the position. Listen to what I'm saying. Accepting the position of being a part of the cabinet in law enforcement had already taken money from countries. That's espionage. If that would have been Don Wiggins or Ron or you or Frank or anyone on this call or Bruce, we would be in jail. Come on, man. And you got enough nerve to ask for forgiveness prior to and say that we should not investigate you and arrest you? Come on. I can't even believe that he would. But that's his law. That's his legal team. That's the gall of his legal team. They did that. He didn't do that. They did that.
Right. What about you, Bruce? What are your thoughts on what's going on there?
I tend to see it the same way as our other panelists have said. You know, it's another example, simply put, as privilege that we don't get. And I use that word loosely. If you've done something, you've been involved in something, and you're not man enough to give it up on your own, and I'm not, you know, I don't know all the circumstances, and you finally do or something, you're responsible for your actions, plain and simple. We would be, as was said earlier. So, you know, he needs a fair chance to explain himself or why he did or didn't do something or whatever the case may be. In other words, know all the facts of what's behind all this. But that he shouldn't be able to get out of jail free card. We don't get one.
Right. You know.
Hey, David. Let me ask a question before we go any further.
Sure.
Now, when he was appointed the position, what office was he appointed to?
National Security Advisor. He was in charge.
Okay. If he was appointed National Security Advisor for the United States of America, what happened when they investigated him to find out where he was getting his money to? From. Was that a part of the investigation before you get appointed to a position like that or not?
Yeah.
Let me provide some feedback to that. This gentleman you're speaking of is a retired three-star general, so he's drawing a pension from the federal government for his years of service in the military. He already had a clearance previously, because he was the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency when he was laid off from that job. So because he's on the president's staff, you would have to assume that no one is going to get disqualified from getting a security clearance. In the way the security clearance goes, my job that I left out of in the military as a security manager, there's an investigation done. You fill out the forms. It takes a minimum of 6 months. So he updates his forms if it hasn't been done in the last 3 years. It takes 6 months. They're going to give him a clearance right off the bat because he had a clearance and because he's a retired general and because he's the presidential staff. And then 6 months later, they'll come back with derogatory information or later, and then he'll have to sit down and answer that. And then the security manager makes a recommendation to the president whether this guy should get a clearance or not. And if the president signs off on it, no matter what the derogatory information is, the guy has a security clearance. Okay? So he has one to operate. Now, the problem with Flynn is that Flynn somehow did not indicate all the funds that he was receiving from these foreign governments. And he got unmasked by someone somewhere, and so it's and he just came in and refiled Friday three different sums of money that he had received that he hadn't previously reported. So that's the problem. Then he had a discussion with prior to being a bona fide incumbent in office, he had a discussion with the Russian ambassador, which was intercepted by the intelligence communities, this discussion, and the discussion was held in regard to the sanctions that the Obama administration had put on Russia, and the Russians were seeking to have relief from those sanctions. So I don't know what Flynn promised them, but that was the subject of the conversation that's already been reported. And so there's a belief by some of us that the Russians are in our pockets, in our knickers, through these sums of monies that we either got loaned from them or got paid from them. Flynn was also working for the propaganda machine in Russia that's really owned by the Kremlin. And so That's the other part of this thing. He was drawing funds from them, and so was Tillerson, and so was a couple of other guys. The guy that was previously the campaign manager starts with an M. So these guys have all drawn funds from the Russians. So, and the Russians have been proven to have interfered with our election process in the United States, as they do in other countries, as they're doing right now today. So the WikiLeaks are owned by the Russians. There's another internet society that's also owned by the Russians.
All right.
Are we to believe, though, that it's only the Republicans that have been dealing with the Russians?
No, the last thing I want to report is that the connection seems to be that either by accident or on purpose, the information that Trump oftentimes promulgates is misinformation, and they're trying to see if that information is actually physically synced with the Russians' misinformation that they're coming out on the internet with through WikiLeaks and other sources, or is it just, you know, it's just coincidence. All right. So the Republicans have been hit as well as the Democrats, but the situation is that the Russians wanted the Republicans to win because they stood a better chance of making out than they did if the Democrats won. They hated Hillary as much as a lot of our general public did, because Hillary made them look bad when she was Secretary of State. So they were for the Russians. Everybody knows that, pretty much, in Congress, Republican and Democrat. And we know right now that they're still interfering with, for instance, the senator from Florida, Rubio. He acknowledged Thursday or so that he was being interfered with at that particular time as well. So they're doing that to corrupt our – what they're really doing is they found out that we're a split community of people in the United States of America, so they're playing on that division that already exists, whether that division be Republican, Democrat, black or white, pink or yellow. They're playing on that, and they're putting out information by paid people to disseminate this information that's going to lead us to further entrench ourselves and to hate ourselves. Because, you know, we're an operating democracy, and that makes them look bad by being an operating democracy.
And you know something? Anytime you have a man that's running for president of the United States of America indicting the country that he's running for, saying that the elections are a fraud, they're just sowing into the negative statements, like you said, Frank, and they're just pouring gasoline on the fire that's already been lit.
Where are you at on this, John?
Well, I've seen reports or heard reports that while, you know, Hillary sold 20% of our uranium to the Russians, I mean, I would think they would love Hillary. And while they did that,
we have a surplus,
you know,
of uranium.
Got,
we have more uranium than we'll ever use.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you're still giving 20% of it to the Russians. I mean, so, you know,
we
and
have
then
more
all
uranium
the sudden,
than
you know,
we,
but that, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I mean, if we're doing tit for tat here with Flynn, you've got to look at, you know, right after that deal happened, Bill Clinton got a $500,000 speaking fee in Russia. You've also got John Podesta now, Clinton's top aide, who has been, you know, accused now of withholding $75,000 worth of shares in the uranium company that got the uranium in Russia. So, I mean, you know, if you're going to look, I think this is great. I mean, you're going to go after your Flynn, but I think you're going to end up there. You're going to end up finding out that this is going to open up a whole bag of worms, and you're going to find out this. This has been going on for years. I mean, the most interesting thing to me is that, you know, since the election, the Clinton Foundation has basically gone bankrupt. They've laid everybody off, and they're no longer around. Well, how could that possibly happen? Well, because the money stopped coming in. Why'd the money stop coming in? Because the influence stopped. You know, they didn't have any more influence with the Clintons. So, I mean, I think this is going to open up so much more stuff. You're going to find out that there's people all over both sides. And unless I don't care if it's Republicans or Democrats, but I mean, if you're taking money And if money's the root of all evil, everybody wants to be rich. Everybody wants to be richer than the next guy. But I'm telling you, when you come out and you're looking at one guy, you got to look at them all.
All right. Where are you at on this, Bruce? What do you think?
I agree, and from what I've read and found that there's problems on both sides, and it tends to be the involvement tends to trace and follow the power, and whoever's in office, whatever side's in office, whatever who's ever in office and where they want to be influenced, that's where they go. So that tends to be what you can find when you try to dig for whatever you think is the real news, wherever you think you can find it. That seems to be a trend that's pretty consistent.
All right. I want to talk about something that I didn't know that could happen in the United States because I've never heard it before. But it's something that's going on, seems across the United States. And so I have to ask the question, Jeremiah, do you think Trump will be impeached?
That'll be going off. I would go off a large scale right now. I see complications, but I don't see complications as if he's possibly impeached at this point right now. So it could be 50-50, but there's a lot of things that has to be done for it to take that route.
And you are leading right into what I want to talk about, because there's something going on across the United States that I never knew that could happen. And I guess I need to be enlightened, and maybe people on the panel can help me. But the city of Alameda, the city of Richmond, the city of there were a couple of other towns in California, Massachusetts, Berkeley.
Yeah.
They've all passed these resolutions to impeach the president. I didn't know that city councils could do that. Is that something new, or what? I didn't know this. Bruce, is this? Have you ever heard of this?
They can pass. They can pass resolutions and edicts and actions all they want. That doesn't necessarily mean that it has any teeth behind it.
Right, but why waste your time if it doesn't do anything? I mean, why are these city councils across the United States doing this? John, I've never heard of this. I didn't know that was. It doesn't make sense to me because it doesn't have any meat.
Hey,
David, why are they doing this? I don't understand.
In our local politics, that happens quite frequently. Resolutions are passed to show the legislators that the city would like to have happen. Okay.
Nice.
So, for instance, we in Virginia Beach do that a lot. Well, for instance, one of them is this Affordable Care Act. So, to show that the city is behind Affordable Care Act, they pass a resolution, and that's all it is. It's just a non-binding vote on the government, but it disseminated to those people so they can use that as a reference that the city of Virginia Beach or the city of Richmond are for this particular legislation that's being proposed. All right. So that's what it is. And that's what cities do all the time. Okay. We do it about workforce housing. We do it about the Affordable Care Act. And if you look, you'll see what the city's positions are on that by those non-binding resolutions that they've sent to their legislatures.
All right. This morning on the news, President Trump told a news outlet that if China didn't do something with North Korea, the United States would on its own. We would handle it. Now, lately, they have been testing nuclear weapons and all that kind of stuff. And right now, our president says that if China doesn't do anything, then the United States will go in and handle it. We're not using our partnerships we have around the nation to help us. I don't think. What do you think, Jeremiah? We want to go in this alone? Jeremiah, are you there? I guess he doesn't want to answer that question. What about you, Don?
I don't think we should go in this alone. I think that we need to put some economic sanctions upon China to get them to deal with Korea. And I think that this administration is dealing with an idiot a real idiot that they got to deal with him with kid gloves because he's a loose cannon. And we should not be in this situation alone. I think we should make diplomatic moves to talk with China and say, listen, we need to corral this guy. Why are they so tied to him anyway? I don't understand. Is it economics?
I don't think I don't know the answer to your question either. What about you, there, Bruce? What do you think?
I can't really add to what has just been said in that regard. It just I'll leave it at that.
Well, you have a guy over there who's, you know, he's a young guy.
David,
I think he's been, his inner counsel
David,
is coming.
The guy's a dictator.
Pardon me?
The guy's a dictator. The guy's a dictator. It's a communist regime, okay, just like there is in China, and he's a strong man. So you can't just go out and you can assassinate him, do things like that. Let me just tell you, one of my church members who's definitely hardcore anti-Obama, pro-president, told me the other day, said, hey, you know, this guy's a businessman, so he doesn't know the call, or what he says doesn't make a lot of sense, and a lot of people in the United States give him a lot of excuses for doing that. But in my mind, you couldn't, as a military, former military person, and a person that's still on their payroll, you couldn't deal with a worse situation than dealing with North Korea, which is akin to me of dealing with North Vietnam, which was also the similar type of country. So these two countries have had a civil war, which we were helping the South in the 50s and in the late 40s, and we had to split the country up. I mean, that's how much power we did or didn't have. And that shows you the people also in that country are pro. The North Korean people are not all against their leaders there. And so the country is split. There's the militarized zone. We've been there since the 1949-47 there. And now we got a president that says, hey, we'll take care of the problem. Well, you know, that's really funny to me because there isn't any way to take care of that problem, you know, other than killing a million people up in north, and that's not taking care, that's not going to solve the problem. So this guy's a loose cannon who's a leader of that country. We have a loose cannon that's a leader of our country. I would certainly expect that bad things are going to happen. Why the president would tweet out something like that, I mean, an ordinary, sane person wouldn't have heretofore ever done anything like that, but we have a businessman that's running our country, and he seems to think that he can put out stuff like that and then later on indicate that's not what he meant through his press secretary. So, but yeah, if you can't not dissolve the North Korean government by any method, even by killing the dictator, because another dictator will take its place. And not only that, the last thing I want to say is that you can't put any pressure on China. It's impossible. China has over 1 billion people in their country, and they are the mass producer of all these inexpensive products that we have been addicted to and grown accustomed to. And, you know, our president thought he could get into a trade war with them. That's not going to happen, because if he did, we would get crushed.
Right. I think it's very dangerous to make those kind of statements, because you got a guy over there who's, it seems right now, wanting to get into some kind of conflict with somebody. He's preparing for something. He's trying to use nuclear weapons and everything. So I think it's concerning. It makes me think that we need to be on our P's and Q's in terms of an alertness that, you know, we can't just be doing that.
Two weeks ago, this guy put out a picture of a battleship being, an aircraft carrier being blown up with one of his missiles. Because what we're doing is the U.S. Navy is a freedom of operation of the sea, is operating in that environment. And, of course, we have aircraft carrier station in Japan, so that's part of the Sea of Japan, and so we're showing force of power. But, you know, he then sent the picture out showing that the carrier's blown up, and that's been on the Internet as well. So, yeah, so that's what you've got. You've got an escalated situation with one guy who's been a knucklehead in North Korea added to our personal knucklehead, and you, there you go. You got a bad mix.
Well, all right. I want to talk about some local things and some change the news a little bit from politics or something, but one of the things about us as men and raising our families, when we were all kids, and I think we all got things that we liked, we would sneak them to the school and show them, you know, like if you got a new toy and your parents told you you couldn't take it, you figure out how to, and the kids with backpacks these days, they can sneak anything out of the house anyway. But I think, I don't know where we're going, because last week, a five-year-old kid in kindergarten got suspended from school because he brought his little stick gun to school to show his friends. So they kicked him out of school in North Carolina. And I'm like, shouldn't we just sit down with the little kids and tell them this is wrong? And help me out, Don. You have kids that you're living with. What would you allow the school to kick him out for bringing a little toy stick gun? I mean, it was wood, you know, just to show his friends.
No, I wouldn't allow that, David. me being who I am, if it were a child of mine, I would set up a meeting with the principal or the authority at that school and try to get some type of understanding of why they kicked him out of school, and then I'd deal with my child as well. I think there's some more to that story. We're not getting the whole picture because it just takes a person doing just what I just said and sitting down with the authority and asking, why would you kick my child out for something like this? There's more to that story is what I'm saying.
Well, their comment is there's a zero tolerance on bringing guns of any sort to school. So
that's
even
exactly
though it was
correct,
it was a gun.
That's exactly correct.
Okay, now. I didn't hear you say it was a gun.
No, a stick gun. I'm sorry, stick gun. G-U-N.
A stick gun? A what?
A gun made
stick
out of
gun
stick.
Means toy, I mean, gun. Means, stick
toy
gun means toy gun.
Made. It was, you know, it's probably like the old rubber band shooting guns you used to have, something like that. Right. Well, you there, Bruce, you have kids in your family.
Yeah, I've got grandkids now in school, and I don't have a problem with zero tolerance of any kind of gun in a school. I mean, that makes very good sense. On the other hand, you wonder if we don't really know if these if the adults and the children themselves are really being communicated to enough to know that. I mean, if he brings something in innocently and really doesn't know it, now, if he brought it in knowing, you know, he wants to be a little smartass, excuse my crude language, or he genuinely didn't know he was doing anything wrong, I would tend to want to sit him down and make sure he understands why, or at least the first time, why, if you truly know it's something that was a, like you said, a rubber band gun or not really a gun. But I agree with the zero tolerance, but maybe the way you handle it, you got to make sure that those involved, parents, children, teachers, administrators, are all on the same page in administering it. And I don't think that's being done in many cases. They put out these edicts or these directions, and it doesn't get filtered to everybody the same way or as completely as it should.
Jeremiah, you're in the baby making age. What happens if you, this happened to you, your kid? What would you do? I mean, not just exactly what would you do, but how would you feel and what would you do with the child?
I would start off by saying it really depends on and it's sad that I have to say this, it depends on the child's environment. It depends on what school district are they attending. Because in different areas of the world, or different areas in, let's just say, Miami, depending on an exact area is how they handle problems. Meaning, you know, the school, the principal, the police department, it's a collective approach. So for it to go in that direction, it was in a collective approach with the principal in the school district, with the police department. But we have to understand taking a child to jail still doesn't help them understand what they did wrong. And that's my problem with the juvenile justice system. And sometimes when a child goes to jail, it gives them the worst impression of them all, because now it's like, oh, I didn't even mean to do that. You can be soured by it. A child could be soured by that situation. I'm allowed to play with guns at home. So I thought it was nothing, you know, going to school with it and show my friends, because it's one of my toys. So it's like, right, the child could be soured by it and propelled to do more negative actions, and him becoming a, let's just say, a juvenile criminal, him continuously getting in trouble, being rebellious, things of that nature. So education is the most important thing when it comes to peers, principals, the police department, mothers, and no children. If it was my child, I don't think I would let my child play with the weapon, play with the handgun, because they can then take that and say, okay, if I can play with it, I can play with a real one. I can take it to school. I could threaten someone with words saying that, okay, keep playing with me. I'm going to shoot you like pow. You know what I mean? So you have to be conscious of those elements that can come up by allowing your child to play with a toy gun, things like that.
So you
with my child, I'd say I wouldn't let my child play with that.
So you're saying you don't think that children, young boys, should play with toy guns at all? You don't do
kind of like an Indian. And the reason I say that is because the parents don't explain what's do's and don'ts with a toy gun, for example. And it's been like a 12-year-old kid got shot by a police officer because they took off the little orange or red part in the front that signifies it's a fake gun. So I don't want to lose my child because a law enforcement officer doesn't understand that that's a toy gun. It's too risky.
Okay. Frank, I know you have a couple of grandsons. Do you think they should not be playing with guns?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct, David. You do not let your child ever play with toy guns anymore, because if that child accidentally brings a gun to school, they are under expulsion. The principal cannot allow them back in the school until they go in front of the school board. And the school board may take that wooden thing that you just mentioned and just allow it to be suspension for that week or 2 weeks, whatever they can, that they've gotten out of it. But they cannot come back ever into the school system unless they're approved by the school board. Okay. Wow. So you don't want any child to play with any toy weapon whatsoever, because if there's any intimidation whatsoever in that school, all our schools in Virginia Beach pretty much have a, what they call a resource officer, which basically means that if you go to like a middle school, you'll see a police car parked up on the middle of the grass close to the front door. So there's police officers manning those schools. And additionally, there are other people that do not have weapons that are assisting that resource officer. And that's been for
security.
15 or more years. Yeah, security. Security people. Well, so
then,
you do not want to – yeah.
But then that brings
and
up
–
cops and robbers.
Because
David,
I went to Toys R Us recently to – get a toy for a godson, and when I was going down the toy aisle, there's a lot of guns. There's a lot of toy guns in a whole aisle full of them. So
and
if the states are doing this, why are the toy manufacturers still manufacturing them? Something's wrong with this picture.
It's about the finance, economic aspect of the situation, sad to say. You know, you can't, we can't expect a company to have any morals and stop making things that be that can put children in horrible situations. They're just thinking about the that's like telling a company stop making a baby doll that's a nude baby doll. I don't think it would stop because you know what? That baby doll is selling out. It's selling out in stores.
So you know, you're saying that parents are still buying their kids toy guns, a lot of toy guns?
Because they're actually belittling the situation. They're not thinking about the bigger picture. They're just saying, okay, little Teddy wants a gun. He really wants one. So let me just give him one and make him happy. But 2 or 3 years down the line, you have making your little son happy with other problems additional. And
okay,
let me give you another example. Let's just say your son is always with you doing little things around the house. So you might have a box cutter. And to your son, that's not a weapon. So you're like, Daddy's always using the box cutter. I want to take the box cutter to school and cut my papers up instead of using the scissors because it's quick, right? So he takes this to school. The police, now it's, you say, oh, he's bringing a box cutter to school. It's a weapon. He probably wanted to shank a student. Like, things get above and beyond when you're talking about weapons in the United States, especially at schools, since we had tragic events. And they have police down here in Miami at elementary, middle, and high school. So
wow.
That could be a prime example of a situation that's not technically used as a weapon, but because your son brought this box cutter to school, he's trying to do something to somebody. And they probably could ask him that question. He could deny it. Well, I just brought it because, you know, my dad uses it all the time. I was going to use it to cut my papers. And I bet you they still will call the police. They still will suspend them. It'll be a whole bunch of negative occurrences after that.
You don't think the converse of that is also right, where you bring the toy guns in the house for a kid to play with, to explain to them how they should play with them, how the importance of knowing about it? And because I know there are people that if they're selling that many for a whole aisle, on both sides of the aisle, are guns and rifles, then people are buying them. So I guess there are those people that believe that having a gun and teaching at the same time is also proper. But you guys, what do you think, John? I know you don't have kids, but where are you on this gun issue and kids and guns?
Well, like I said, I don't have kids, but I got to tell you, it's one of the stupidest things I've ever heard. I mean, you know, we grew up playing cops and robbers. We grew up playing cowboys and Indians, and some of us in our 50s actually grew up and started robbing steam trains and blowing them up and having a good old time. So I think what you're going to find, I just looked it up here, state of Michigan, we allow kids less than 10 years old to hunt in the state of Michigan. So you're talking kids that are, you know, grade school age who are legally able to go out and kill a deer, kill geese, kill ducks. I think what you're going to find is a lot of these kids that are bringing these toy guns to school have never been taught right and wrong with them. They're not, their parents are not NRA members. Their parents don't own firearms. I would much rather see a kid learn and understand how to use a gun and use it and realize that it is a weapon than sit at home all day on a video game playing these games where you're blowing people's faces off and heads off and body parts off and you're getting more points for it. So I'm a gun owner. Our entire family are gun owners. But I'll tell you what, I grew up playing cops and robbers. I don't have any desire to go out and kill somebody unless they want to kill me. And, you know, so these schools, I mean, someone got suspended for having a gun. They chewed a Pop-Tart to make it look like a gun, and they got suspended for it. I mean, at some point, common sense has got to reign over these people and rein this stuff in. I mean, politically correct is getting ridiculous with this stuff. I would rather see these kids, like I said, the NRA has Eddie the Eagle programs. Ted Nugent here in Michigan has Camp for Kids, where they teach these kids how to use firearms, how to respect firearms. And I guarantee the kids that are being suspended do not have parents who have taught them right from wrong in regards to guns.
All right.
But we're talking about elementary. I can understand once a child becomes like 13 years old, 12, around that range, 11 at the earliest. But, you know, I don't want to teach my 7-year-old son. He should be worried about books, not about weapons. You know, he should know that it's dangerous and don't pick up one.
But you know,
well,
the,
you should also know if you come across one.
And
you should also know that if you come across one, the right way to handle it. You know, there are so many people. You see movies and everything else, and you see all these actors and everything else, and they're always committing, you know, the seven deadly sins in regards to handling a firearm. You know, kids need to be taught when you see any type of firearm, you have to assume that it is loaded, and if you pull the trigger, you are going to kill somebody. If you point at a gun at somebody and you pull the trigger, you're going to kill someone.
And with the conversation going on right now, I'm sorry, we have to end right here. Maybe we'll pick it up when we come back. I want to thank everyone who was listening out there. I see a ton of you out there listening to us. But you have been listening to The Man's Voice. So join us again next week at 6 o'clock, same time. And to the panel, you guys have a great week. I'll talk to you. And tomorrow is Ron's birthday, but Ron was unable to be here today, so... we will talk to you again next week. Have a great week, guys.
Have a great week, guys. Yeah. Happy birthday, Ron.
Baseball
birthday
starts at 8:35 tonight.
Yeah.
Still on, David?
I am.